Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and Newcastle, Delaware, and earned a BS in chemistry from Mary Grove College and an MD from the University of Michigan. For the past 25-plus years, she's held various leadership positions at institutions of higher education, including the University of Iowa, MSU's Kalamazoo Center, and Western Michigan University. Today, she's the president of Mary Grove College, the ninth such president in its 100-plus year history. Her name? Dr. Elizabeth Burns. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Burns, the president of Mary Grove College, the ninth president in its 100-plus year career. Welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Oh, we could. We could. Okay. Both of my parents were born in Detroit. My mom grew up in Detroit and went to Immaculata High School and Mary Grove College. They lived right down the street from Mary Grove and then lived in that area, northwest Detroit. By the time I got here, my grandparents were in the University District on Oak Drive, and I spent a lot of time with my grandfather walking around, walking to the clock tower at U of D, and all sorts of things. My dad, his family, large Irish Catholic family, grew up in Detroit and then moved to Ann Arbor, so his older brothers and sisters could attend University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan University. They were focused on making sure that that everybody went to college. Dad finished after the war, World War II, finished up at U of M in the engineering department, and then worked for the auto industry, most of the time working for Chrysler.
What's the biggest thing, Beth, your dad taught you, and what's the biggest thing Mom taught you?
I think my dad was, I'll start with him, because he was a quality control engineer, and really had us, taught us from very early age to look at systems, although he didn't call it that at the time. I mean, we really took a systems approach, a planning approach, thinking. He was always telling us to think it through. My mom was a math teacher. She taught at the Madison Heights School District after we moved back from Delaware, and before that she had taught at our Catholic school that I attended in Newcastle, Delaware. And she taught me a lot about hard work and always to go different paths. I mean, my mom knew how to get from point A to point B about six different ways, and that's what I liked about her. I always, she always took a different route.
The word on the street is that you actually attended kindergarten at Mary Grove College.
I did. I even have some memories of those days when we lived out in Redford Township by that time because the family was growing, and they were looking for there were a couple of other kids in the neighborhood, so they carpooled us in from Redford, where we lived, to Mary Grove. And I was told that I dropped out of nursery school there because of transportation, and then I was there for kindergarten and it was a very interesting experience in that they really liked it. Was it was the 50s, so little girls did little girl stuff and the boys got to do boy stuff, and I found that sometimes I wanted to do the boy stuff and I was redirected into the kitchen and having my tea parties and things like that. And I must admit, Jack, that growing up I wasn't very good with tea parties.
Now you do a lot of them. So you earned a BS in chemistry from Mary Grove, magna cum laude.
Yes.
That's tall cotton.
Yeah.
Why chemistry?
Well, I went to Marygrove wanting to go to medical school. I had thought about it, but you needed to declare a major in something. And I was far more interested in chemistry than biology. Would have gone to graduate school in chemistry had I not gotten into U of M or another medical school. And, you know, my dad and I had talked about, you know, it's sort of like planning, having a plan B. And so chemistry, and so it was a professional chemistry degree. I was set. I took my GREs and was all set to go to grad school had I not been admitted to medical school.
Medical school, you got a medical degree from the University of Michigan?
I did. Go Blue.
What were your plans and dreams back then?
Well, you know, I grew up in the 60s. And at the time, being from Detroit and seeing the need for primary care physicians, my dream was family medicine. Family medicine was a new specialty at the time and really captured my imagination. It was being an old-fashioned generalist, general practitioner. And with all the modern, you know, knowledge that one gets in medical school. So they did not encourage that at Michigan, which probably made my resolve even stronger. And, you know, I was able to get back to Detroit for my M3 and M4 year. I did that at Henry Ford. I'm looking at Henry Ford Hospital right out the window here as we talk. And that was a wonderful experience. Did my internship there and then went into family medicine residency.
13 years, family physician. Dr. Burns, what did you learn in that chapter of your life?
Well, actually, I was a family physician for a lot longer than that. I've always been, you know, I'm still board certified. I just haven't practiced for a few years now. Dropped practice when I went to Kalamazoo to be the CEO for MSU KCMS. It's what I learned is that you can have an impact. It's an incredible privilege being a family physician, delivering babies, taking care of families as they form, being their advisor, their advocate, their health care, you know, providing health care for them, taking care of people, the importance of preventive medicine, being, you know, keeping as healthy as you can. And I learned that you really needed to have that available for all people. Healthcare is, you know, we treat it somewhat like a privilege, and I really do believe that it is a right. I think that we have problems in this country because people don't have access to healthcare, and it really impacts very negatively on families.
We're talking to Dr. Beth Burns. When we come back, we'll ask her about some of the hundreds of babies that she helped deliver and the miracle of birth. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasul. We're with Dr. Beth Burns. For 13 years, she practiced as a family physician. You delivered hundreds of babies. Talk to us about the miracle of birth.
Well, it is, it's really amazing. Not being a mom myself, I have never gone through it from that standpoint, but I've been to hundreds of labors, both with my own personal private patients and my residence patients, and in Iowa City, at Mercy Hospital in Iowa City, at University of Illinois Hospital in Chicago. So I was there that's actually probably 25 years. I started delivering babies when I was a resident in Harrisburg. Actually, I did a few at Henry Ford as well. And it's just a privilege working with families throughout the pregnancy, talking to them about what's going to happen, how is it going to happen, how can we make this a really good experience. So I came up right as the time that dads were starting to be in the delivery room, and it was just wonderful seeing. I only had one dad of all the dads. I only had one faint. on me, and we sort of just, he sort of was leaning in. I hip checked him into a chair, and he was able to, so he sat down and he was okay, and we got the baby delivered. And then he sort of woke up and could see the baby. But it was, it's just amazing to be there when a family is formed, when life, when the baby takes the first breath. And you are able to present that baby to the mom and to the dad, and just the wishes that the good wishes that you feel for that child.
Beth, when you give the mom her son or daughter, and she sees that child for the first time, what do her eyes say?
Oh, it's just pure amazement and love. They just it's just a. The pictures, I mean, their faces, they're soft and joyful. It doesn't make any difference if it's, you know, 1 a.m. or 5 a.m. in the morning or in the middle of the afternoon. Most babies don't come in the afternoon. They seem to like to come in the wee hours of the morning. But they are, you know, they're happy. They're so grateful to see this little life they've been carrying for so many years.
From 2008 to 2012, you were president and CEO of MSU's Kalamazoo Center for Medical Studies.
That's right.
Tell us about that chapter.
Well, that was a very interesting chapter. I had wanted to move back to Michigan because of my parents getting older. And so I had interviewed at a couple of places. And KCMS was the... fulfilled a couple of functions in Kalamazoo. It was the graduate medical education consortium for both of the hospitals. So both hospitals in the 70s had come together to consolidate their graduate medical education programs. And then Michigan State, when that was founded in the 70s, also had a distributed campus model where they sent their medical students in the third and fourth year throughout the state of Michigan. And so Kalamazoo was one of their campuses until 2014. And so we had student medical students to take care of, the M3s and the M4s, to make sure that they got their experiences and what they needed for their education, and then also maintaining the accredited graduate medical education programs for both osteopathic physicians and allopathic, the DOs and the MDs, in Kalamazoo for both Borges and Bronson.
You've spent the past 25-plus years in various leadership positions at a number of institutions of higher learning.
Yes.
What has this taught you?
It's taught me to, when you get to a new place, to assess what's going on, to learn the culture, the rules of the road. For because each individual, you know, you think medical school to medical school to medical school, they're different in some ways. I went from Iowa, you know, very rural, Midwestern, to University of Illinois at Chicago, urban, Cook County. That influences, you know, sort of the struggles that they've had influence sort of what you could accomplish and what you couldn't accomplish. And so you had to be pretty realistic about that. Sometimes I learned that the hard way, but you know, you learn as you go forward. The beauty of going to North Dakota was back in rural, again with a distributed campus, and just having students come in who really wanted to help their state, their home state. It was the only medical school in North Dakota, and there aren't that very many people in North Dakota. But really wanting to go back, we had our students for their education go to small towns, learned a lot about health systems, both in rural America and in urban America. So it was. I was always learning, always trying to figure out how we could do the best for our patients and for our students.
Quarter of a century, higher education. What's been the biggest changes?
I think the biggest change has been the amount of accreditation, the standards, the rules, the things that, you know, being in medicine, you know, dealing with the changes in medicine, the changes in how compensation happens with insurance companies. So there's the accreditation developments of how you maintain quality programs, how you do that. I think the students are the students, and they're very altruistic and, you know, goal-driven. They want to do the best for their patients. But I do think that some of the background things, really some of the rules and the accreditation standards and dealing with the, you know, as a practicing physician, dealing with the insurance companies, that has changed over the years.
In June of 2015, you announced that you're going to retire.
Yeah, I did.
And you quickly failed that course. And you decide, come back home to Mary Grove, and you become the interim provost.
Yes.
We didn't have any provost on the south side of Chicago. What does a provost do?
Well, a provost is the chief academic officer for the college. And so they have provosts at, you know, a lot of institutions. They may have different titles for them. So I was responsible for the faculty, overseeing all the academic programs, the library, the registrar's office. So those were the kinds of things that, you know, that I had to learn very quickly coming back to Mary Grove.
When I was in school, we had this dog, Ginger, that ate my homework all the time. Do kids still have dogs that eat homework?
Well, perhaps in elementary school they do. But in this day and age, with all the electronics and everything on, you know, in Word and on disks and that you can mail in electronically through email, I think it's a little hard. We do have electronic glitches sometimes. I haven't had to worry about that too much. Mostly I hear about that from the faculty, or heard about that from the faculty. But, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, some of our students don't have internet at their homes, so we need to make sure that we have our computer labs open and accessible to them, so they can come in and they can do their work, print off their work in a timely fashion. Because one of the things that has never changed is students are still wait to the last minute.
January 2016, you become the ninth president of Mary Grove College in its 100-plus year history. How did that happen?
Well, as you've mentioned, I was the interim provost, and they had an interim president who they thought was going to be there for a couple of years. And that was the original plan. There were some things in his personal life that got in the way of that, as far as health in his family. And he accepted a job closer to his home, so he'd be closer to his daughter. So there was an opening. And Mary Grove we were in the midst of leadership change and stabilizing the college. I was there. I had served on the Board of Trustees, so was familiar with the story, and was asked to serve as president.
Tell us about Mary Grove College, Dr.
Burns. Mary Grove. Well, Mary Grove started out in Monroe, Michigan, 1905, and moved to Detroit at the request of Bishop Gallagher. The sisters broke ground and started building in 1925, started their classes in 1927. So I think the first graduating class would have been in 1928. Was a women's college, mostly Catholic women at the time, and had the history of really, and the tradition of really educating women to be teachers. You know, and back in the day, if a woman was going to be working as a professional, it was nursing, and it was education, so into teaching, and that was Mary Grove. The IHMs are absolutely committed to education in their sponsored organizations, both Marion High School, which I graduated from as well, and Detroit Cristo Rey, which they sponsor, along with Mary Grove. So Mary Grove developed, and then came the 60s and the 70s, and I started in 1968 and was you know, Detroit was changing. We had had some unfortunate occurrences in 67. And so, I lived in the suburbs at the time. And but I was really passionate about coming to the city to be at Mary Grove. So I had only applied to U of M and Mary Grove and got into both and chose to come to Mary Grove. It was a wonderful experience for me to be with women, because it was still a women's college, African American women, women from the Detroit, from Detroit, the city, from the suburbs, and from out of state, learning to live together and learning, you know, and getting our education as well. So it was a great place and a great mission.
We're talking to Dr. Beth Burns. Mary Grove is in her blood. She graduated from there, her mom graduated from there, and her grandmother served on its board. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Burns, president of Mary Grove College, which was founded in 1905, and its mission is giving students opportunities through urban education in the liberal arts. Beth, what's your vision for Mary Grove College?
The vision that we have, it is one of opportunity through education. But not just through education, but education that's applied in our community, in our city. And we want to have students to have a well-rounded, so we have sports, but we want to have students have an opportunity to experience the liberal arts, to learn critical thinking, reasoning, writing skills, so that they can go into their majors with really good fundamentals, so that you don't know what you're actually, and I'm an example, going to end up with. I mean, as far as a job goes, so they have to be able to get new information, absorb new information, utilize that information, and so our vision is that of really taking students and educating them so that they will have an impact on their city, on the city of Detroit. We really want to revitalize and refresh our education program. Detroit needs teachers. I've talked to a lot of people who say Detroit needs teachers. You know, the system right now is really works against people going into the city of Detroit, because if you're very altruistic and you want to make a difference and you want to go into some of these schools that are having struggles and are having difficulties, the underperforming schools, you know, you have a grade from the state, if you will, on, you know, and you're graded by, are your teachers going and making a difference in the schools that they have, that they're at? And if they're in underperforming schools, that's a negative. They get a negative mark for that. But our students really want to make a difference, and they're excited about teaching, and we need to get more of them in our ranks. And so we've really done some strategic thinking about how we educate our future teachers.
Talking about undereducated schools, underperforming schools,
yeah.
You've got many, many incoming urban students.
Yes, we do.
And so therefore, you've got remedial courses in several cases.
Yes.
Talk about the remedial courses.
We have obviously a math course that really brings students up. We test our students to make sure that, you know, where they are best, where the fit is best. You know, do they go into college level math or do they need a remedial course? We have a math lab. We have a writing center. So for our students who need help with writing, they can get classes, because as you go through college, I'm sure everybody remembers, there are a lot of writing intensive courses where you have to do papers, you have to utilize the library, you have to know how to do research, to support your argument or support whatever hypothesis you might have. And so we have the Writing Center, which was funded by a very generous donor, Nan Geschke, who's also an alum. And we keep that working because it's really been, it really has paid off for our students.
Education today is paramount to success.
I believe
so. And in the Jewish community, the Indian community, the Chinese community, it's a given. You know, you're going to get educated. It's huge. How do we get that belief and that culture in our inner city communities?
Well, I think we've started. I think when you know, I saw this, and I'll go back to my Kalamazoo years. I think with the Kalamazoo Promise, that was the message. And everybody woke up and said, yeah. And as a community, Kalamazoo came together and really talked about what is it meaning and what the meaning of getting a good education is and how to do that for our children no matter where they are, no matter what school they're in, increasing the opportunity by removing some of the financial. But it's not just financial. It's getting the preparation. It's really getting the message. It's encouraging. It's mentoring. And those are the kinds of things that I see happening in Detroit as well, with the Detroit Promise, with the programs that people are trying to start to really help our students. Because life is tough in the city, in the urban city. And when you perhaps only have one parent at home, it is very hard. And so sometimes you need another adult in your life to offer the encouragement, and that's what we have to provide. Our teachers and classroom management becomes very important. And so we're starting our students in the classroom and observing the classroom from their first years, so the early years. We're not waiting until they're student teaching. They need to see and experience. So we're partnering with some of the schools in the city of Detroit to really help them. You know, we'll help them and they will help us in really getting the excitement back about teaching.
Speaking of partnering, mm-hmm. you've got a phenomenal partnership with Cristo Rey High School.
We do.
Talk about that partnership.
That is, again, you know, Cristo Rey is sponsored by the Bazillion Brothers and also the IHMs. And we have a dual enrollment program there where their senior students come and spend some time at Mary Grove, take two courses, and they take a math course, and they take an interdisciplinary course, IS-100, which is partly an introduction to college, but it's also partly to get them thinking and working in teams and working with each other. The students who test out of the math program, the math course, we have two math courses that they can take. If they test out of the higher one, we're trying to put together a course that combines art and technology. For them. This is funded by Mr. Venegas, Frank Venegas, who is just a wonderful gentleman who really has great hopes and dreams for these students. And, you know, so he really, and the students, the ones that I've met are just wonderful. They're wonderful young men and women who really want to learn, who really want to leverage this college opportunity. Now, they're not in class with college students. They're in a cohort right now. But we also have opportunities if high school students want to come and take a dual enrollment class. We have that opportunity as well. But the Cristo Rey is a very special program.
We're talking to Dr. Beth Burns, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible. We're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Burns, president, Mary Grove College. Doctor, what's surprised you the most about Mary Grove these past 12 months as president?
What has surprised me is you know, it's sort of how much it's changed. The years have gone by and things are still very much the same, the dedication of the faculty. You know, I guess I expected it to be very different. And we, you know, we have the technology and things like that. But, you know, we have the students, we have the faculty. The faculty are just devoted to our students. And that hasn't changed. And sometimes you think it would have, but it doesn't. The level of dedication, you know, I think the biggest thing that's changed since I graduated, of course, is the community, and the community's coming back, and that's the hope, that's the excitement.
You talked in a previous segment about the need for a continuing stream of future quality teachers in our inner cities.
Yep. So we need to have that. We need to have students think about that. So we actually have a program that we're starting with middle school. Kids, that it's sort of like when I was growing up, they had Future Teachers of America. And so this is somewhat of the same idea, is talking to them about being a teacher and having them think about that and what does it take to be a teacher. The pipeline programs, you know, we do it for medicine. We go into schools and, you know, talk about what it is, because kids think that they can't do it. You know, it's like they get told early on they can't do math, or they're not going to be good in science, and they don't give themselves a chance. They don't ask the questions. They're not encouraged. You know, and so we've got to encourage them. We've got to encourage them to be teachers. Now, there's a lot of other things that have to also help to encourage people to be teachers. But one of the things is that, you know, as we get students very excited about being teachers again and going in and helping out and giving back to their community, it's going to be great.
Beth, what do all great grade school and high school teachers have in common?
The joy of teaching, encouraging their students to ask questions, and really holding their students to standards and setting goals for them, not letting them slide by. You know, really sharing, you know, seeing the potential in each child and sharing that information with the parent, with the child, so that there is a vision out there of what they can become and who they can become.
When I went to school, I didn't have teachers. I used to ask fellow students answers to questions.
Mm.
But that didn't fly. So.
No.
Okay. We all hear about the cost of tuition.
Yes.
Okay? And how it's just, and then the student loans. If there's a young person today that says, Doctor, I would love someday to become a grade school teacher, but I can't afford to pursue this dream because my student loans, I'd just be so in the hole financially, I'd never recover. What do you say to that person?
I say to them that there's a lot of help out there for students who are motivated, good quality, hardworking. It doesn't mean that they don't have to work. I mean, you know, we all worked in the summers between, you know, and some of us worked during the school year as well. There are a lot of opportunities. You know, there's the stated tuition for any college or university, and then there's the tuition that the student really has to pay when you figure in financial aid. The federal government's done us a big favor in that they've changed the basis for the federal the FAFSA, the form that the students and their parents have to fill out, so that they can use the prior year's tax return. So we don't have to wait before we can help them figure out what kind of financial aid they're going to get. You know, the donors, we've had some very generous donors with scholarship money, so that also helps pay their tuition. It doesn't mean they're going to live high on the hog while they're in college, but you know, they work hard. They take a number of classes so that they can get through school in 4 years, 4 to 6 years. You know, beyond 6 years, it really does become very expensive, and they borrow as little as possible. So they have to watch their expenses, but it can be done, and it doesn't leave you with a lot of debt. And then if they go into some community work, and for nonprofits, there's talk about loan forgiveness. And so those are the kinds of things that the students need to think about. So they shouldn't close that door without exploring.
Dr. Burns, paint us a picture of what Mary Grove College will be in 2025.
Ah, 2025. Mary Grove, I want to be part of a continuum of education in the city of Detroit that provides the college, but that we have input from our high schools, that we have give and take with you know, kids coming to college, the college going to the schools where our students are coming from or might come from, really filling a need in the city of Detroit in urban education, with a focus on that, with a focus on business, and also with the focus on responding to what the community needs in education. So some continuing education courses, master's degree courses, so that our folks that work in the city can also advance in their careers.
It's 58 acres. It's a hidden gem.
It's beautiful.
That campus is beautiful, right on, you know, 6 Mile, mm-hmm. just west of Woodward. You went to kindergarten there.
I did.
So when you walk these same hallways and between the buildings, Beth, what do you think about?
Well, I have a lot of mixed emotions about it. Yeah, you know, sometimes I think about, you know, how did I not notice some of these things when I was a student here, not kindergarten, but in college. I think what a gift it has been. You know, I'm thankful for the sisters that brought Mary Grove to the city. What a gift it has been to the city. What has been a gift it was to the community. And I want to keep it going.
As our time winds down to this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners, please?
That they need to work hard, that they need to ask questions, that they need to have goals, and know that they can succeed and achieve.
Dr. Elizabeth Burns, welcome back home. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a key part of the whole rebirth of Detroit. You and your team keep up the great work.
We will.
Thanks. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.